welcome to the Pitch Fishing Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to better cricket, whether you play it, whether you coach it. There's three of us here to chat about the game and to help you improve or to help you improve the games of others. My name's David Hinchliffe. I look after things. And joining me this week, as they pretty much always do, it's, first of all, the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Gareth. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Very good.
Marvellous. And secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Well, how are you doing? You all right?
Very good, thanks. Yep. Living the dream,
all
as always.
All crystal clear today, which is great to hear.
Yeah, fantastic. New microphone. So if anyone's listening to this and thinking that I've upgraded my vocal cords, no, I've just upgraded the hardware that I use.
No elocution lessons.
No, not yet. First thing I wanted to talk about this week was the future of cricket. And we spend a lot of time talking about things that have happened and things that are happening, and that's a right and proper thing to do. But every now and again, I like to look ahead, and it's always difficult to predict things, obviously. But I was wondering what you guys' thoughts were on what cricket is going to be like in 10 years or so time. Is it going to be significantly different? What are the formats going to be like? How popular is the game going to be? What's the gap going to be like between the amateur game and the professional game? Take it wherever you want, but where do you see the game in 10 years or so?
Well, I think going to that last thing you just mentioned about the gap between the amateur and the professional game, I can only see it getting wider. Based on the fact of fitness, strength and conditioning impact, to be honest with you. Because, I mean, that's where the game's gone. It's where the game's going to continue to go. It's been fascinating to read and listen to parts of interview between Virat Kohli and Michael Vaughan this week out in India after the second test match about how he's taken his game to a new level, which effectively is just becoming more and more professional with the way that he goes about his preparation, in particular around his physical preparation, which allows him to do the things that he does now with in a fairly sort of automatic way. And I think that's going to be the biggest difference between the amateur game and the professional game, because the professional game is going to keep pushing that bar further on, and it's becoming more and more difficult for the amateur game to be able to replicate that.
That's interesting, actually, isn't it? In that, you know, strength and conditioning is one of those things that you can do if you're an amateur player, right? It's not like you, in other parts of the game, you might not have access to the same levels of coaching or the same amount of equipment, but getting stronger, getting faster, getting fitter, getting more mobile, getting more athletic, those are things that anyone could do. But I guess maybe it's a time thing, isn't it?
Yeah, they can, but it's a time thing, isn't it? And that is it, isn't it? You've got people who, the professional game, obviously their time, their profession is their cricket, so that is their focus. Whereas in the amateur game, for most people, you know, cricket is the recreation, isn't it? It's the thing that takes you away from your working life. It's the escapism, I suppose. So that's where I see the biggest difference coming, as much as anything. And I think that interview for me is definitely worth having a little look into in the Daily Telegraph. Go online and have a read of it. It's a fantastic interview. But it really comes out how professional he was. And in fact, there was a quote in there from Duncan Fletcher that he put in, which was that cricket is the most unprofessional of professional sports. And I think Fletcher had a view, you know, two or three years ago, that's definitely the case. And it may still be the case now, but the gap has closed, I suppose, on all of the other professional sports. But as cricket starts to go into the realms of becoming incredibly athletic and go into a new level in 10 years' time, which is what your question is, you know, where were we 10 years ago in terms of our athleticism? Where are we now? We're going to go at least the same distance again, I would suggest. And that's the biggest difference to me that's going to happen, which then puts challenges on what is the role of recreational cricket. Yes, of course, talent ID is crucial, But more and more, probably, the professional arms of the organisation are going to be looking after that a little bit more than they have done in the past. And then recreational cricket comes about retaining people in the game, retaining interest, working within the new sort of culture and society that we have, which is a bit more instant. And that's where the recreational game's got to go for me, is just being a bit more creative about the formats of cricket that we put on for people.
And Lavers, I've noticed in recent times there's been a lot of discussion around that, the phrase of technique as well. And it's specifically, recently, Australia's problems batting, people have been saying, oh, well, they're too focused on old-fashioned ways of doing things and old-fashioned techniques. And then at the same time, you hear commentators talking about somebody like Ben Duckett, who's struggling to play Test cricket at the moment, for England, because his technique is too modern, and you know he's too focused on not having a good solid defence like they used to have in the old days. So these things seem to swing back and forth depending on the argument somebody wants to make. But where do you see the technique side of things in 10 years? Is it just something that's going to become more and more flexible? Is it going to stay roughly where it is, or is it going to root into something specific again?
Well, whether or not it's 10 years or 15 or 20 years, but there's every chance really that the technical side of the game starts to become a bit more separated, and you've seen Australia do it already, really, where they've fielded an almost completely different squad for a 2020 game as they have for a test match. So there's every chance that something along those lines begins to happen and starts to become a bit more established as time goes on. So you might start to see people who are becoming more and more specialists in each department, as the two formats, or three formats, I suppose, but there's always the ODI option, which is somewhere in the middle. Whether or not it's slightly closer to T20 or not, that's for people to decide. But there's every chance that you start to see people being specialists from a fairly young age, and potentially clubs separating within at the professional level. So there is a management structure for the 2020 unit, and there's a management structure for the 4-day and 5-day cricket. And yes, you would think there will always be people who have an ability level, and your Virat Kohli's, your obvious examples, AB de Villiers and etc. But as time goes on and the level of performance continues to climb, people may have to have that complete commitment to one format or the other. And if that happens, then no doubt the performance level will go up as they can specialise more and more. But the interesting thing would be how that's then kind of impacted on what people view, what people watch, what happens at club level. Does the same thing filter down? I know already in some countries, I know in New Zealand where I used to play, that there's a separate 2020 league for a separate group of players on a Saturday as there is for the all-day cricket stuff, so, or the two-day cricket stuff as is often played. So those things are already happening, and they're already being trialled, and they're already early signs of what could be happening sort of globally, whether it's international level or club level. But I can see that definitely becoming something that we do see in the near future.
I mean, to me, techniques is really interesting. On Ben Duckett, the steer away from the Australia issue at the moment, but the Ben Duckett one's a classic one for me, because if you look back over history, he's really struggling out there at the moment. He's probably not going to play in the next test match, but how many English batters over the history of the last 20 years have gone over there and nailed it straight away in those types of conditions? And really, you're looking predominantly at two players. You're looking at Alistair Cook on his first tour, got it right, and you're looking at Joe Root on his first tour, getting it right, and we're in the middle of hopefully somebody else getting it right now who's opening the batting for England on their first tour. But you know, the bottom line is that those conditions are really, really difficult, and it took players two or three tours into subcontinent to start really building their understanding of being able to move forward, being able to move back, to really work at that defensive technique. And I'm convinced that, you know, with a little bit more exposure to those environments, Ben, because he is incredibly talented, will be able to make those adaptations just like a load of others have. You know, Graham Thorpe, the first time he went to the subcontinent, found it more difficult than the third, fourth time that he went to the subcontinent. And I'm sure that's the same for most people, really, that are going into those environments. So it's a difficult thing to replicate when you're not in those environments. You need exposure to it.
I think it would be very foolish to kind of discount someone for a technical weakness. And if we were to, I mean, we only need to look back over the last 18 months. And 18 months ago, you'd have seen Johnny Bairstow taking a hell of a lot of criticism for some technical flaws that he was having. Now, he doesn't get to the ability level that he was at then, even though he wasn't necessarily an international cricketer. And Ben Duckett hasn't got to the ability levels he is at now without having the kind of the strength and the physical capabilities to adapt what he's doing. I'm sure he's adapted things 5, 6, 10, 12, whatever times over the last 5 years to make it better and better. So it's just a case of he needs to change and he needs to improve something that he's doing technically in terms of where he positions himself against the ball. Johnny Bairstow had that issue. If we'd written him off then we wouldn't be seeing the most successful keeper batsman literally in the history of Test cricket in terms of runs in a calendar year.
And that's a change probably I'd like to see happening over the next few years, is that idea of saying, rather than if someone struggles in a certain situation or with some technical point, that is offered as evidence that they are not good enough as a player. Because you and I, Gareth, have both written about something this week, which has obviously been on our minds, which is that difference between having that fixed mindset of saying someone is either good enough or they're not and there's nothing they can do about it, and having that growth mindset of going, this failure that at the moment Ben Duckett has experienced, but anyone could experience, is purely evidence that you need to work harder at something until you get good enough at it. And if you keep working hard enough and you keep practicing in the right way, then you will get there eventually, but it's not evidence that you are a complete failure if you fail for a couple of times in a new situation, just like Duckett is experiencing now. And I think a lot of the time, I mean, I guess that's the way that media portray things. You know, they have to portray them in these very extreme ways. But I'd like to see it more as, here's a player that's been identified as a possible talent. Now, how can he go about making himself good enough to make sure that he can produce results, rather than saying, oh, well, he's failed, he's got a bad technique, he's one of these new players who just is a 2020 slogger and he's never going to be able to do it. Next.
Yeah, I completely agree. And what's been great for me to view has been Ben's response to, you know, having a tough time out there. And he uses Twitter as one of his sort of mouthpieces, really, to let the world know how he's feeling. And I think he's displayed that growth mindset in the way that he's faced up to the fact that, you know, it's not gone well. He's going to have to keep working harder and working smarter. And it's one of the reasons why I think that you know, Ben Duckett might come back from his tour having played 2 test matches and not scored any runs, but I think he's also going to come back from his tour with a much clearer view of the direction he needs to go to develop his game to be able to play Test cricket. And that's the exciting thing for me about him, is that he's displayed a growth mindset in this last week. And I think in the same way, Australia, you know, people are having a dip at them. I mean, they're batting technical programs have been very consistent for the last 20-30 years. You know, you can, they're very strong. You speak to any Australian coach and they're very strong on the fundamentals of a game, and you know, we're not saying that those need to go out the window at all, because they're good fundamentals to have, all the things that the Australian coaches will list. However, the crucial thing is that people do go about those differently, and I think that was one of the articles that came out this week that I read, is that people do get to that end point of having their fundamentals in place in a different fashion. And maybe Australian cricket has been accused of being a little bit too rigid around those things. And as we always say, once you get dogmatic about something has to happen, you're wrong, because ultimately the game of sport is a little bit more randomised than that. So, you know, if Australia cricket look at it and go, yeah, OK, these are our core principles, but also have a bit more flexibility and learn from this experience that they're going through at the moment, and I'm sure that they'll come back with a batch of batters that will rival the 1990s and early 2000s crew, who were phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hope not.
So the only kind of core
principles you can retain now these days are the outcomes, aren't they, really? People think there are pathways that have to be in place all the time, but the outcomes are the core principles these days, and there are many, many ways, as we talk about every week, there are many different ways to skin a cat. So stick to your outcomes and you believe in them, but look for as many ways as you can and challenge yourself to find different ways to achieve those outcomes, because ultimately you're seeing it happen all around the world every day with people doing things differently.
Okay, let's finish this section with a quick note about the Pitch Vision Coach of the Year competition. Every month we take in nominations from anywhere in the world, from anyone who wants to nominate their coach to be Coach of the Month and have their chance to be entered into the Coach of the Year competition. So if you have a coach that you really appreciate and you think is doing a great job, doesn't matter what level that they're coaching at, if you think they're doing a great job, then make sure that you head over to pitchvision.com and nominate your coach for the Coach of the Month competition for November. Now it's time for the questions section on the Pitch Vision Cricket Show. And of course, the way that this works is we have a couple of questions that are sent into the show. We choose them, we answer them as best we can, and then we choose one of those two questions as the winner of the prize, the weekly prize, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can send your questions in to us for future shows by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, and we've got other ways of getting in touch with us that you can hear about at the end of the show. But Govo, I don't really know how to say that, but however you pronounce it, he's sent in a question. I'm assuming it's a he. This person has sent in a question. And Govo says, I'm 24 and I play club cricket in Melbourne. I'm a fast medium bowler. I open the bowling for my club. I've been bowling really well, but not getting that right wicket-taking ball. My figures for the last two games are 0 for 21 in the first game from 7 overs, 0 for 14 in the second game from 6 overs. This is bringing mental pressure in playing my next match. What can I do to get those perfect wicket-taking deliveries?
Well bowled would be my first thing to say, because you've gone for very few runs there, which tells me that your bowl in a reasonable length would be what those figures are telling me there. And it could possibly tell me, and I'm speculating here, but it could possibly tell me that you haven't necessarily always brought stumps into play quite as much. So that could be your wicket-taking ball. It's just not shifting your length at all, but maybe shifting your lines to bring those stumps into play. And that doesn't have to be every ball by any stretch of your imagination. It can be, maybe a few more regular balls than you've bowled to date. So my first conversation, if I was a bowler in this situation, or I had a bowler who was being economical, and say I was playing with him as a wicketkeeper, you get a really good view of line. So I would go to my wicketkeeper and I'd ask him, how many times do you think in an over am I bringing the stumps into play? Just to get a bit of an objective, I know it's a subjective, but it's a different personal view, I suppose, from another person who's in that direct line with your bowling. So that would be my first thing to do. I wouldn't necessarily change too much in terms of the type of delivery you're trying to bowl. I'd see if you can bring the stumps into play a little bit more. Or, as we say with batting, if you score runs once every three or four innings, you're going pretty well. You just put two really good bowling performances in terms of economy together. If you repeated, I would be really surprised. The law of averages would suggest that you'd end up with at least a one in that first column, in that wickets column. So if you repeat what you've already done, I reckon that you'll pick up wickets. It's not as if you're going to go through the whole of a season going at, three and over and not picking up wickets, because nobody's done that ever in the history of the game. So back yourself in that respect, but also get that other view from the wicketkeeper around line and could you bring the stumps into play. But other than that, keep doing what you're doing. And don't let wickets be your pressure builder. Glenn McGrath was somebody who got over 500 wickets in Test cricket, but actually he kept his processes really, really simple, trying to hit a length as many times as he possibly could, as hard as he could, which it sounds like you're doing, but he always used to say, I want to try and bring the top of off stump into play as much as I possibly can too, and that could possibly be where you're not quite getting it right at the moment. But again, that's a speculation. Get that view from a keeper.
Lavers, it seems like maybe he is sort of panicking on the basis of incomplete evidence. He has had two games where he said he's bowled well, but he hasn't taken wickets. So therefore he must have to do something different and quickly, otherwise it's all going to go terribly wrong again. But if you had someone in this situation who came to you for advice, how would you be advising them?
I'd probably just be getting him to bowl more, if I'm honest. He's had two really good spells. You would imagine from the stats he's had, he's bowled 7 overs and 6 overs for barely any runs. So you would assume he's playing in a one-day format as opposed to anything else, because if the team were bowling 80, 90 overs in an innings, you would think that this fellow would be getting a few more than 6 or 7. Given that, his economy is fantastic. He's doing a really good job for the team. I'd probably be demanding the ball back, and it sounds like when the batsmen are starting to open up, he's maybe not being put on it, and maybe that's what he needs to do. He needs to bowl in a slightly different position against batsmen with a slightly different mindset, and that will come in. But definitely don't be panicking. If it is a one-day format, ultimately it's going to be the runs that wins the game, isn't it? So the most runs win, so the least runs you go for, the better, really. Yes, wickets are going to help, but wickets will help slow the run rate. But if the run rate is very slow already, it may be that what you're doing is good enough, and you just need to sit in there, and wickets will come along the way, as Gareth has suggested. One of the things you've said is that this is bringing mental pressure. It's going to be bringing mental pressure, and a hell of a lot, but to the batsman, not to you. I wouldn't be worrying about that. Think about how the batsmen are feeling when they know that the guy that they're coming up against on the weekend hasn't gone for more than 3 and over in his first 2 games. They're probably looking to score at a higher rate than that, you would imagine, in whatever the format is. So I'd be not worrying too much about myself, and having a real positive mindset. And you can think about a lot of great bowlers over the years, and obviously Gareth has mentioned Glenn McGrath there, but he's just building that pressure and building that pressure again. And if you can bowl 3-4 tight overs in a row, eventually chances are going to come. It might be that chances are coming and they're not being taken, but you'd have probably identified that. But that goes back to a conversation which we had, I think probably 2 or 3 weeks ago, David, when we were talking about how we should measure performances, and if we look at the stats, do the stats tell it all for a bowler, or actually is there a bit more going on in terms of who we've been bowling at, what chances have been created and missed, and various other variables. So I'd be sitting tight, and I wouldn't be panicking about my performances at the moment, because it sounds like you're doing a pretty good job for the team.
Sort of links back to that growth mindset thing again, isn't it? You know, if you're in a fixed mindset, you are looking at that 0 for 21 and 0 for 14 and saying, oh, that just proves that I'm doing something wrong. Whereas if you've got the growth mindset, you look at that and saying, well, I'm bowling well at the moment. I need to keep working hard, and I know that it's going to happen for me. So I'm going to keep working on it. I'm going to get advice, as Gary's mentioned, get advice from people who are in a different position, and then keep going towards it, because I know I'm bowling well. It's just a matter of time. So it sort of all links back to that idea of, you know, whether that those outcomes are proving your ability, or whether those outcomes are just showing you that that there's more that you need to do. So when you're putting pressure on yourself, that's not going to help you. But when you're saying, well, I'm doing all right here, I just need to keep going, there isn't any pressure then, is there? Because, you know, the pressure is all about what you do in your own mind. It's not about what happens.
Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, he's a young bowler. It's going to be quite tough, because the one thing you want to do as a bowler, really, is you want to take wickets. You want to have that opportunity to celebrate something. You want to have that instant moment of success where you get a bit of gratification from the team, and you feel like you've made a big contribution in a small space of time. But I mean, there's very, very few opportunities to celebrate a dot ball, are there, really? So I think you've got to think about the bigger picture again. A wicket isn't a victory. Contribute towards your team winning a game, which I would imagine you're doing at the moment. So try not to get too caught up in, yes, it'd be great to take wickets, but what's my job within the team? And that's another discussion we have a lot, is how does my role fit in? He hasn't mentioned whether or not his captain or his coach or whoever it might be are happy with him or not. And from the sound of it, given that that hasn't come up, you would think that probably they're happy with the job he's doing, so it might be worth just kind of opening up this communication and this line of discussion to the captain and the coach and say, look, I feel like I'm not doing what I should be doing. And you might find straight away they respond and say, look, you're doing exactly what you wanted to do. In which case, that will hopefully take a bit of that pressure off you and help you relax in and let you think a little bit more long term and not get too caught up in taking a wicket every ball now.
Next question's from Utkash. And Utkash says, I want to improve my reflexes to face more pace bowling. Can you guide me with proper drills?
I'm not sure how proper they are, but I'll give you a couple of ideas. Basically, if you want to try and build your reflexes up, you've either got to face something quicker than you're going to get in a game, or you need to bring the distance that the ball is projected towards you a bit quicker. So that's one way of doing it. I would suggest going bringing the distance down. I think that's a really good way of building up reflexes and reactions. I'd also suggest using soft balls to start off with, because then you can build up your confidence and your competence whilst in a fairly safe environment. You're not going to break any bones, which you could do if you brought the bowling machine closer, for example, and kept the speed on 70 miles an hour with hard balls. Then there's a potential injury issue, particularly if you're relatively new to facing high velocity balls. So ways that you can do it, you can either get bowling machine balls that are 3 or 4 ounce in weight, which obviously don't pack as much punch, which are good, using Incrediballs, using tennis balls, and different methods of delivery. You could have somebody hitting a tennis ball up from the ground, so one bounce hits to you from a variety of different distances. Obviously, if they keep their hit very consistent in terms of velocity, then the closer they get to you, the more your reactions are going to be challenged. You could have somebody throwing from different distances, throwing up from the ground towards your head, for example, is a really good way, and over the top of your head, of getting used to balls going past your ears and over the top of your head and feeling more and more comfortable every time. So that's a really good drill. Then you can get one of those catch it boards, which gives a bit of variation in terms of the contact that you get on the board. It might nip away, it might nip back in, and again you can use a different variety of balls to build up confidence. Every time you feel more confident and really confident against a tennis ball, then you can move on to an Incrediball, then you can move on to a soft bowling machine ball, you can move on to a harder bowling machine ball, and ultimately you can move on to a cricket ball. But just varying your feet distance is a really good way of doing it. And when you've got through all of those different drills, and you can do those front foot and back foot, and if you're going to do them front foot, then I suggest that the thrower has have you seen the baseball type shields that hitting coaches use in baseball, where they throw a ball around the side of a like a wire fence or over the top of a wire fence, and then if a ball gets belted back at them, they've got a wire fence to stop them from getting cleaned up. That's a good way of doing the front foot ones, but back foot ones you can get pretty close, get the ball up around chest height and head height, and get used to balls coming at you pretty fast. When you've gone through all of those different types of drills, then you can get a bowling machine on, and we do a lot of fast practice, and I think we featured it last year during the winter phase of development, where you put a bowling machine on really fast, outside off stump, way outside off stump, and getting your reflexes used to being able to play that. You can actually just stand there and get used to a ball at 85, 90 mile an hour flying past, nice safe distance away from your chest or even on the front foot. And then when you feel ready, you can start to try and hit those. What generally happens is the first few you get absolutely nowhere near, because you know your reflexes and eyes haven't worked up to that speed yet. But once you start having a go, you might miss a few, then you might start edging a few. But over a period of time, you will become more accustomed to a ball getting released at 85, 90 mile an hour and then being able to hit it. Again, it's safe because the ball's not lined up with your body, and it's something that we use really heaps of times in our winter development program to get people's reactions and exposure. Again, like we talked about Ben Duckett with spin, this is exposure of high-paced stuff. I'd go soft balls to hard balls from a variety of distances, and then my last bit before I get you to face really fast bowling would be to get you on a bowling machine and get that ball outside off stump and get you to start to feel more confident and competent and being able to hit that ball or leave that ball or whack it.
How much work labours do you do with guys who where you're really ramping the pace up? I know that it's something that I would like to do more of, but often I feel like, well, I need to prioritise, you know, other areas with the club guys that I work with. But you're working with younger guys who have got ambitions perhaps beyond playing club cricket. So how much work do you do with them, and what kind of stuff?
You've hit the nail on the head there straight away, that you will be prioritising, and there will be people who have got other things that are more fundamental errors, where if you can address them and amend them, then that's probably going to add more value to the game. But with a lot of guys, this exposure, which is the word that was used before there, to that higher pace is really useful. So I guess it's picking your individual kind of putting them in some kind of high speed environment. But one of the things that I've liked to do in the past, and I think works quite well, is trying to mix that up with something that's fairly tame as well. So we'll often go for work through a set which will be a 24 balls, and we'll often go through 12 balls at that high speed, which is, well, depending on the age of the cricketer, but generally kind of 5 miles, maybe even a little bit more than that, beyond their usual kind of comfort zone, so 5 to 10 miles above which the thing they're used to facing. And then we'll drop it down for the second 12 and come back in towards maybe 5 or 10 miles an hour under what they're used to facing as a top speed, because as much as challenging that ability to react is really, really important, then being able to adapt and resist the temptation to go and fly out at the little dibbly-dobber at the other end is also really important. And if I think about how wickets are taken more often than not in a lot of our formats of cricket, it's probably more often than not that we're early on a ball as opposed to being late on a ball. So I try and make sure we balance that out, and we do challenge the speed side of things, and we do challenge those reflexes. But then also after that, we challenge the next thing, which is the ability to wait for the ball, which is still important. For the question in hand, one of the other things that I was considering was what it means when we talk about our reflex. What does that mean? And I think in a very simple technical environment where a reflex is pressing a button, it's obviously the kind of stimulation of the brain appreciating a reaction, some sort of notification, and then sending a signal down through those muscles to actually press a button or whatever it might be. But when we're talking about batting, reflexes can be slightly different, because it's our ability to get the bat to the ball in a given period of time. So I'd also be considering how efficient or how well am I timing the swing of my bat? Am I seeing the ball being released and identifying the length of the ball after maybe, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 metres after it's released? But at that stage, what is the bat doing? Am I in a position where I'm still going down with my bat before I have to come up, or up and down, or is there something that can be improved in the timing of my release? And I always think back to obviously one of the great players the last 20 years, Ricky Ponting, but at point of release, he was always in a position where he could then move into the shot almost instantly, and he had that slight lunge forward, that big backswing, and that would be very comparative to Brian Lara as well, someone else who at point of release was ready to move straight into the shot, whereas other people are still moving out of the backswing first, which takes a little bit of time before they can then make their movement through into the shot, and that costs them a little bit of time, and for that reason they might be a little bit late or not quite so accustomed to that high speed delivery. So as well as really challenging yourself, see if you can watch and just record what you're doing and see how efficient your movement patterns are, and are you wasting any time moving out of the shot before you're moving into it once the ball's been released.
And that is all we've got time for on the show this week. Before we leave, we are going to do just one more thing, which is decide on the winner of this week's competition, the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the two questions are on offer. Govo's question about taking wickets and feeling pressure, and Utkarsh's question about improving his reflexes. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Govo's this week. I think, he's had a great start, hasn't he? Bowling fantastically well over in Melbourne there. And just keep sticking at it, bud. You know, I talked about the wicketkeeper, but as Sam and I both recognise, you know, they're pretty sensational figures that you've got. And I reckon if you bowl a similar length, similar line in the next game, that you'll probably end up with having at least one or two or three or four or even maybe five wickets in that wickets column, because you can't keep repeating good stuff and not getting rewards. But maybe talk to the keeper about your line as well. He'll be able to give you a view on that.
Congratulations to you, Gobbo. And Gareth, if someone else was listening to the show and wanted their question answered and also maybe win that prize, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. There's also social media ways of getting in touch with us. You can use the Pitch Vision system, of course, if you've got an account there. And if you haven't got one, why not? Get over there now. It's free. Or you can use Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, or Twitter @pitchvisionacad. You can listen to this show every week as well. If you go to your favourite podcast app and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, you'll find us in there. Or you can head over to pitchvision.com/academy to get all the details of the podcast with ability to download it or get the show notes or many, many other ways that you can interact with the show and listen to the show. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, fellas.